I have two texts of scripture. Tonight that in my mind they go together beautifully, though they sound like opposites, but really they aren't. The first one is in the 15th chapter of John, verse 5. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, ye can do nothing. Without me, ye can do nothing. The second text that I want to connect with that one is in the fourth chapter of Philippians in verse 13. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Now the first text says we can do nothing. The second says we can do all things. But the connecting link there is Christ. Without me, ye can do nothing. We need to recognize that. The Apostle Paul says, when I am weak, then am I strong. And Jesus said to Paul on that occasion, my strength is made perfect in weakness. The weaker that we are, the more perfect his strength can be made in us. The only proper esteem that we would have of ourselves is down nothing. But to esteem Christ in us will put us up into the bracket of all things. I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. First, we want to notice the insufficiency of humankind. That's not just me, that's not just you, that's everybody. All humankind. And Jesus said to the people of his day, he said, which of you now? Any of you? Who would you be that can add one cubit to his thought or to his stature by taking thought? That's in the 12th chapter of Luke, verses 25 and 26. Jesus spoke along that line, and who of you now, by taking thought, can add one cubit to his stature? I've seen some folks that were shorties, and they rather lamented that fact that they were short. They'd like to be taller, but just worrying about it won't make them any taller. There's no way they can get any taller. That's just the way they grew, and Jesus says you can't change that. You can't change anything by worry. Worry is the most worthless thing that anybody ever did in this world. And somebody said that the worst thing about worry was that people chose the most inopportune times to do it, when they could least afford it. When they're face to face with problems and they need all their faculties keen, they destroy their abilities by worrying. And that doesn't change anything. It'll change you, it'll worsen you. Maybe land you up in your grave, worry yourself to death, but it doesn't change the circumstances or conditions. Jesus admonished us about that. Just don't worry about if you're short or if you're tall. And I would add to that, don't worry about if you're old or if you're young. I think it's a great thing when a person can grow old graciously and just accept it and be gracious in it. Opal used to say, when people were worrying about their gray hair and just lamenting over their hair getting gray, she says, "I'm proud of every gray hair I have in my head." And she says, "I just look forward to getting old." Well, God never permitted her to get very old. But that is the way she faced that matter. Now, Jesus said again in the 5th chapter of Matthew in verse 36, he says, "You cannot make one hair white or black. My hair used to be black and I couldn't make it white. Now it's white and I can't make it black. I just can't change things in that category." Things like that. But he goes ahead to say, "If you then be not able to do those things which are least, why take thought for the rest?" I don't suppose there would be anything smaller than a person's hair. And the idea of changing that. But he says you can't change it. People's got ways of doing it now, but it doesn't last. But you can't change it. And if you can't do the things that are least, why take thought for the rest? I'm arriving at a conclusion here that everything that you and I think of in the terms of self-sufficiency, and I can do this and I can do that, is all superficial. You ever stop to think just how superficial pride is? Did you ever stop to think just how helpless you and I are? Says Sister Chandler gave a testimony one night in Pasadena at the camp meeting there that just set that camp afire. And she had had a long bout with inflammatory rheumatism. She had suffered much. And they had to take care of her like a baby. She couldn't do a thing for herself. Couldn't turn herself into bed. They had to turn her on a sheet. She couldn't stand to be handled. And for them to take hold of her and turn her over, they just had to turn her easy on a sheet. And she said one day, she was lying there upon her bed and she was repining over the condition she was in and how helpless she was. And she told the Lord, said, "Just look at the shape I'm in. How helpless I am. Can't do a thing for myself. And I can't be a mother to my children. I can't be a homemaker in my home. And I can't be what I should be as a mother, a wife, homemaker, whatever. Just look how helpless I am." And the Lord spoke to her and said, "You've been just that helpless all the time, but you just didn't know it." Folks, we're always just that helpless. And the more we can keep that in mind, the better off we're going to be, the more God can do for us. "Without me, you can do nothing." Couldn't even draw breath if it were not given us from the Lord. In 2 Corinthians, the 13th chapter and verse 4, it says, "For though he was crucified through weakness..." Now think of this. It's talking about Christ. "And he was crucified through weakness..." We can hardly grasp that thought, can we? That Christ was weak. That he had any weakness. But it came to a point that he became just like us. The scripture said in his humiliation, his judgment was taken away. His power was removed. And he became just like us. And in that, they just took him like they did Samson when the Lord had departed from him, and they just took Jesus and led him wherever they would and did whatever they wanted to with him. His judgment was taken away in his humiliation. "And he was crucified through weakness, yet he liveth by the power of God." Jesus couldn't do anything to protect himself or defend himself when the Lord withdrew his judgment from him and left him just as a helpless individual. He showed us just how helpless a person can be without the Lord. He came down and met that same situation and condition. They never could have crucified him as long as he had that judgment that he had when they was going to cast him down off of the bluff, the precipice, at one time and dash him to pieces, and he just disappeared out of their midst. He had his judgment then. He had power that was taken away from him when the time of his humiliation came. And then they could lead him about and do whatever they desired to do. Yet he liveth by the power of God. For we also are weak in him, but we shall live with him by the power of God toward you. That's where all of our power is. All of our abilities are in him. Without me, you can do nothing. In Acts, the 8th chapter, verse 33, Philip was preaching to the Ethiopian eunuch at this place, and when he had joined himself to that chariot, he found the Ethiopian eunuch reading the prophets. And he read that place where it was written in Isaiah, the prophet, in his humiliation his judgment was taken away, and who shall declare his generation? For his life is taken from the earth. They just took his life. They couldn't take his life. He said over and over again, my time isn't yet come. And they couldn't do a thing with him. But when his time came, they could do whatsoever they chose to do with him. When the time came and his humiliation brought about a removal of his judgment from him. Now, in that time, he had need of the Lord, need of the Father. And he obtained help from his Father. The Scripture said that he, through the Spirit, offered himself without spot to God. Now, that wasn't a simple matter. That wasn't easy. Just consider all of the injustices that were being heaped upon him. And all of the maltreatment that he was suffering. And all of the humiliation. And everything that was being done to him. Do you think it was easy for him, through all of that, to keep free and clear and clean from all resentment and all bitterness and all fight back? He was a son of God, but his judgment was taken away. Now, I don't think that was all that easy a matter. But through the aid of the divine Spirit, he was able to do this. Offer himself without spot to God and just keep entirely free from all malice and bitterness and resentment and strife out of his heart. And in that hour, when they took him and crucified him, he went to the cross praying, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. Entirely free from all of that contamination of bitterness and resentment against all of the injustices that were being heaped upon him. He was crucified through weakness, but he lives by the power of God. The Apostle Paul said in the 15th chapter of Romans and verse 18, he says, for I would not dare to speak of any of those things that Christ hath not wrought in me. If Christ hasn't wrought it in me, I wouldn't dare to speak of it. He boasted some, but he boasted in the Lord. Now I remember the psalmist said, my soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. And when people are magnifying the Lord and exalting him in what we would commonly call boasting and what would just be empty boasting, if they were not considering the Lord in it, all the humble people rejoice in that. Everybody's glad when the Lord is being exalted. All the humble people are. In 2 Chronicles, the 20th chapter, verse 12, the Syrian army has come up against the children of Israel, and Jehoshaphat is the king at this time. And he received word from his messengers that the Syrians, a great host of them, were coming up against him. He went out and presented himself before the Lord, and he said, "Now we have no might nor power against this great company." Oh, that's a wonderful place to get to. That's a wonderful place for you and me to get when we'll just stop all of our struggling and quit the fight. "I just don't have any power against this situation." And he says, "We don't know what to do. We can't handle this that's coming against us. It's too big for us." But he says, "Our eyes are on you. We're looking to you." "When I am weak, then am I strong. My strength," Jesus said, "is made perfect in weakness." And Jehoshaphat became real weak at that time. "We have no might nor power against this great company, and we don't know what to do. It's clear out of our hands. It's overwhelming. But our eyes are on you." Folks, don't ever get your eyes off of Jesus. Peter failed when he got his eyes off of Jesus and he walked on the water as long as he kept his eyes on Jesus. You and I will surely fail at any moment that we get our eyes off of the Lord. And if we get to thinking of strings that we can pull and things that we can do to help ourselves out in our situation, we're on the road to failure. Keep your eye on the Lord. Our eyes are on you. And the Lord told him, in verses 15 to 17, he says, "You won't have to fight in this battle." Now, if Jehoshaphat had had a different attitude, he'd have had to fight and he'd have lost that battle. There wouldn't have been any way he could win that battle. But when he recognized his own insufficiencies and his own lack of ability, it reminds me of a time when the war was going bad. In the Second World War. And it was proposed to Mr. Roosevelt that he declare a national day of fasting and prayer. He said that would just be acknowledgement of our weakness. Jehoshaphat wasn't afraid to acknowledge his weakness, and in acknowledging his weakness, he obtained victory. And God said, "You won't have to fight in this battle. Just do like I tell you." And he laid out the battle plan to him. Told him right where he'd find them. "Go down there, and you'll find them right there by a certain brook and around a certain rock. And the funny thing about it, you know, generals and commanding officers in carnal warfare, they would command that an aerial bombardment and an artillery barrage be laid down to kind of soften that situation up over there before we go into it. But what did God tell this man? He said, organize a company of singers and send them out there. That's a funny way to go into a battle, isn't it? But Jehoshaphat did just as it was laid out to him. And the singers went out ahead of the army, and God laid an ambush out there among the Syrians, and they destroyed themselves. Every man's sword was against his brother. Singers spearheading and attacked in battle. That's a strange thing. God has a lot of ways of doing things we haven't figured out yet, doesn't he? I remember Opal telling about one night she was sitting up with a sister that was dying with cancer. And the sister got to suffering real badly, just really suffering. And Opal said she prayed and prayed and prayed till she just prayed out. She didn't have any more prayer and was getting no help. Finally, she said she just kind of sat back and began to sing softly. And said you could just see that pain letting up, and that sister quieting down, and pretty soon she was asleep. God sent singers into the spearheading the battle here. And he's helped many times through songs sung in the Spirit and in faith. Things that look so little to us that we would be intimidated to even take hold of them, God just uses them in miraculous and wonderful ways. Well, Jehoshaphat would have naturally thought as a man, what a fool them folks will think I am sending a bunch of singers out there to meet them. But that's what God told him to do. And so he did that. And in doing that, he obtained a great victory. When it was all over, there wasn't any of them folks left out there. The enemy was all destroyed, and they destroyed themselves. God just set them one against another. In Judges, there's a text. The 7th chapter of Judges and the 2nd verse. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand has saved me. As long as we feel like we can do something, God isn't going to do anything. And I have said often that if you're going to slug it out with your adversary, God will just let you slug it out with him. He won't get in it at all. For us to get God into any matter, somebody's got to get right. And when somebody gets right, God will get in on that side. But as long as we're striving and slugging at one another, God will just let us do that. And let us destroy ourselves. He said, if ye bite and devour one another, take heed lest ye be consumed one of another. And that's just what's happening when people get to biting and devouring at one another. They don't know it maybe, but that's just exactly what's happening. They're destroying themselves. So now he said, the people that are with you are too many. And they was just a little smattering of an army against all them Midianites down there. They just like grasshoppers spread in the valley down there. But God said, if you go out and conquer those Midianites, you'll say you did it. So he began to weed them out, and he weeded them out till there was 300 of them left. Such a group to go out against a multitude that is like grasshoppers spread in the valley out there. But God gave them the manner of attack and just how to go at it and just what to do. And they just surrounded that camp out there, 300 of them, everybody with a pitcher and with a trumpet. Now, according to the setup that Israel had, there was to be a trumpeter with every so many soldiers. And so when the trumpets began to sound, those Midianites assumed that there are so many soldiers at every place there's a trumpet, and we're just surrounded with a great host of the Israelites. And they broke their pitchers and the light began to shine, and they shouted the God of Israel and of Gideon. What's that?
The sword of the Lord and of Gideon.
Yes. The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And those folks thought they were surrounded by a host, and there was just 300 out there. But God made it come to pass and caused them folks to destroy themselves in their flight, getting out of there. Too many. I can't do anything with you as long as there's that many of you. Now, God isn't advancing the idea there that he doesn't want a great many saints, but he doesn't want us depending on our numbers. He wants us depending on him. Without me, ye can do nothing. In 1 Samuel, the 14th chapter, in verse 6, now in this case, the Philistines had conquered the Israelites, overrun their land, took away all the weapons from them, and there were only two swords among them. Jonathan had one, and Saul had one. That's not much artillery to fight with, is it? But now Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will fight for work for us. For there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. Now he had one of the swords, and his father was back off over there somewhere, and he had the other one, and that is all it was in the land of Israel. But he said, let's go over to them. may be God's work for us. God is not restrained to save by many or by few. Oh, that's a wonderful story to me in the Bible. So the armor bearer says, all right, I'm with you. And Jonathan told him just how they'd do. Said, we'll go over among these rocks and said, we'll show ourselves to them. And if they say, come up to us, we'll go. For the Lord has delivered them into our hands. If they say, stay where you are and we'll come to you, then we won't go to them. So they showed themselves and they sat down there, come over here, we'll show you a thing. Jonathan said to his armor bearer, said, come on, the Lord's delivered them into our hands. And he went down there and the Lord laid an ambush in that case. And by the time that was all over, it said there was not a one of them left alive. Destroyed the whole company of the enemy. God did it. With Jonathan and an armor bearer, two men and one sword, God did the whole thing. There wasn't anything there for humanity to trust in or to look to. Jonathan couldn't look to his sword against all of that company. But he said, maybe the Lord will work for us. He's not restrained to save by many or few. He can save by a few as well as he can many. And he did this in this case. I knew of a man. I don't know if I knew the man or not, but I knew of the man that prayed and prayed and prayed for the God to show him just how insignificant he was. Help him to see it. Well, it would be an advantage to all of us to see it, but finally God told him, said, I can't answer that prayer. Why, he says, God, why can't you answer that prayer? I thought you could do everything. And God said, you're so insignificant that it wouldn't be possible for you to comprehend just how insignificant you are. Said, I can't show you that. How superficial all self-esteem is. All pride is. In the 39th Psalm, verse 4, the psalmist said, teach me that I may know how frail I am. Make me to know mine end and the number of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Then he said, thou hast made my days as a hand's breadth. And I think of a hand's breadth as a measurement of space, and my days are a measurement of time. And if I were setting up a mathematical equation on this, it would read like this. My days are to time as a hand's breadth is to space. Now, a hand's breadth against all of this space out here, they say it's 93 million miles to the sun. I don't know how far that is, and they don't either. That's kind of an incomprehensible distance as far as I'm concerned. Then beyond the sun, there are myriads of worlds and planets that they measure the distance from this earth in light years. Light traveling at the rate of 186,000 miles a second. And how long did it take a ray of light to come from that star or that planet down here? Put a hand's breadth up by the side of it and what do you have? Well, David says, my days compare to eternity, just like that. He was feeling himself pretty insignificant, wasn't he? Christ, he said, I was one time young and now I'm old. But even though he lived to be old, he says, my days compare to eternity just like a hand's breadth does to space. How frail I am. In the 17th chapter of Acts, verse 25, he says, God is not worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all men life and breath and all things. And then down in verse 28, he says, for in him we live and move and have our being. Did you know that there's just one breath? That's right. Just one breath between you and eternity all the time. And that isn't all. Maybe we can comprehend that, but let us realize that that one breath is in the hands of another. It's in the hands of the Lord. And just any time he'd see fit to hold up that next breath, we'd just be there. That's how frail we are. Couldn't even draw our breath if God didn't give it to us. We just draw our breath so automatically that we're not even conscious that we're drawing our breath. But getting the shape like Sister King, when she has some of them short breathing spells she has, she's conscious of every breath she gets. Other things come so automatic to us that we're not even conscious of them, but let us be brought low and we'll be extremely conscious of the things that we take so much for granted all the time. Without me you can do nothing. But now the Apostle Paul, and folks, I'm not a spiritual defeatist. I believe in the saints being strong and doing exploits, going places, doing things for God. I believe in that. But it's all in him. All in his name. The Apostle Paul said here at this point in the 4th chapter of Philippians, and I'll return here now and notice verse 12. He says, I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Folks, you know you and I need to learn to know how to meet our problems in life. How to deal with them. We need to know how to be abased and keep our heads up. We need to know how to abound and keep an even balanced view of ourselves and of our insufficiencies. We need to know how to be full and we need to know how to be empty. Paul says, I know how to abound. I wonder if we know how to abound. It's a common thing with people when they're abounding to forget God and just feel self-sufficient. People don't know how to abound. And therefore, we don't abound all that much. Too much abundance would lead us away from God. He says, I know how to suffer need. Do you know how to suffer need and keep your courage up? Keep your faith in God. Keep happy and joyful in the Lord when you're suffering need. Have you learned that? Do you know how to do that? Evelyn has a little book up home. I haven't read it, but I read a few excerpts of it. The title of it is, Thanks, Lord, I Needed That. And folks, God's going to work to your advantage and mine. And if we will just learn that and recognize that when we're suffering need, God is working that for our good. And when we're abounding, He's working that for our good. And when we're being abased, He's working that for our good. And when we are being exalted, He's working that for our good. We can just say all the time, Thanks, Lord, I needed that. For every trial, for every test, for every disappointment, for every problem, for every trouble, Thanks, Lord, I needed that. When we reach that point, then we can truly recognize that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. He gives to all men life and breath. In Job, the 12th chapter, in the 10th verse, He said, In whose hand is the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind? The breath of us all is in His hand. If He'd withhold it, we'd just be there. That'd be the end. Can't even draw our breath without Him. In the 15th chapter of 1 Corinthians, verse 10, Paul says, For by the grace of God I am what I am. Sometimes we may get a kind of an exalted idea and opinion of ourselves, but let us never do it. It's to our hurt when we do. Let us always acknowledge from our very hearts that anything at all that's accomplished in and through us is by the grace of God. God did it. Now, I have a little illustration like this. And if I put Jesus over here, and I line up behind Him, that makes 10. Then if you get in on the act and you line up behind Him, that makes 100. Somebody else gets in on the act, and they line up behind Him, that makes 1,000. And the more nothings that you can get behind Christ when He's in the lead, it adds to His power and ability to accomplish His work. But suppose we turn around now and we get these zeros over here and we get the one over there. We're working on our own, we're self-sufficient and all, and yet we're just nothing, and everyone you get in there cuts down the power and operation of the Spirit of God just that much. Instead of having 1,000 here, you've got a 1,000th over here. You got him trimmed down just that much. God doesn't want you and me trying to lead Him. He wants to lead us. He wants to be in the vanguard. and every one of us following, and God working in us and through us to will and to do of His good pleasure. I think my texts go together real good. Without me, you can do nothing, but by me, you can do everything that I want you to do. Amen.